Good morning, it's WMNF Tampa. Time for Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. We'll be paying our own tributes today to Adam Yauch, who died Friday. In sort of a different way from some of the things you've been hearing and reading, perhaps, from the first day of Talking Animals, nearly 9 years ago, we used lots and lots of Beastie Boys instrumentals as part of the show. So we'll be doing that throughout today's program. And Dean, as we're doing right now, rest in peace, Adam Yauch. I'm Duncan Strauss, really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll speak with author W. Bruce Cameron about his new novel, A Dog's Journey, sequel to the acclaimed and highly popular A Dog's Purpose. First, though, as always, kicking off the show with an animal tune, in this case, by one of the 70-plus bands performing this Saturday at Tropical Heatwave. This is the Growlers, with Sea Lion Goth Blues here on Talking Animals. That's the Growlers playing Tropical Heatwave this Saturday, along with 70-some-odd other bands. Get your tickets, WMNF.org, the usual outlets. Calling here during business hours to speak to Miss Julie, 813-238-8001. It's going to be fab. Including probably no shortage of animal songs like that one, Sea Lion Goth Blues. These us into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, W. Bruce Cameron, the award-winning columnist and New York Times bestselling author of several books, including A Dog's Purpose, the acclaimed and immensely popular saga. It spent 10 months on the New York Times bestseller list, And the sequel to that book, A Dog's Journey, came out yesterday. So we'll discuss dogs, books, books about dogs, maybe films about books about dogs, and more when we speak with Bruce Kamen in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. So a bit later in the show, we'll step into the comedy corner, which of course involves animal comedy. We'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a copy of Bruce Kamen's new book, A Dog's Journey. Also later, we'll hear more animal songs, including one by another band playing Tropical Heat Wave this Saturday. We're all about the heat wave, folks, as well we should be, and as well you should be. It's going to be a huge blast, biggest one ever. Right now, though, it's time for the Animal News and Announcements segment, a look at the items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon, produced, as always, by you-know-who. Let's get started. First of all, another rest in peace to Maurice Sendak. Monsters, but animals, really, was his bailiwick. Amazing, amazing artist. And hard to imagine any childhood getting by without enjoying Where the Wild Things Are. And if you want a little balm for various losses or just anything else that's kind of not going so great, try to track down Stephen Colbert's interview with Maurice Sendak. Really charming and lovely. And anyways, so again, heat wave coming up, and so many great bands, too numerous to mention, literally in this case, but happened to see one of them last week in my neck of the woods on the other side of the state, Sister Sparrow and the Dirty Birds. Great, great band. I think nine strong, big horn section. Anyway, that's just, I mean, there's zillions of great bands, including bands that have been part of Talking Animals events. On tap for Saturday includes Sons of Hippies, who play Talking Animals Music Night, and the second festival, Acme Jazz Garage, play Talking Animals Music Night, and Rebecca Pulley, Rob Pastore, who did the same, and Sunset Bridge, amongst many, many others. So there's just countless reasons from a variety of angles to make sure you make it out to Heat Wave this Saturday. And of course, the next day, it's Mother's Day. If you're lucky enough to have your mom around, call her, see her, do something, flowers. And if she's not around, all kinds of cool ways to remember, from Hamel and Tribe's great song to just, you know, sharing a quiet memory, or maybe not a quiet memory, depending on what your mom was like and what would be most fitting. I know I'll be doing something like that. And getting together with other moms that are important to me and my family. All right, so on to animal news. The Diamond Pet Foods voluntary recall on some of their pet food brands has been expanded after a salmonella outbreak in one of their plants left 14 people sick in 9 states. The dog food in question was manufactured in Gaston, South Carolina plant. At least 5 people were hospitalized from handling the food. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention told the Associated Press. On the official website for the recall, Diamond Pet Foods added dog food under the County Value Diamond Premium Edge Professional 4 Health and Taste of the Wild brands, with a 2 or 3 in the 9th position of the production code and an X in the 10th or 11th position. Diamond Naturals, particularly the lamb and rice dry dog formula, chicken soup for the pet lover, soul adult light formula, and diamond puppy formula had already been recalled in April of last year after random sampling showed that some of their food tested positive for salmonella. Reuters reported the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, are investigating the outbreak. The infection is possibly from people touching the dog food and then touching their own food. Cross-contamination with products that touch the tainted pet food, or from direct contact from a dog that had a salmonella infection. sort of national news, but on the local front, from the Herald Tribune here, animal advocates were celebrating the efforts of the Sarasota County Animal Services Office Monday after 260 dogs removed from a Venice residence last week had all been moved to rescue shelters by the end of the day. Quote, "I'm in awe of animal services," said Daria Oglesby, a board member for Honor Sanctuary Local Rescue Group. "The process was so organized. They did a great job. Animal shelters from Inglewood to Tampa stepped up to find temporary homes for the confiscated dogs." Quote, "I got the call at 8:30 Wednesday night," said Oglesby, "and we went over first thing Thursday morning. Three more trips later, and Honor Sanctuary had taken in 48 dogs, which will now be prepared to find permanent homes. The dogs have been living in chicken coops outside a five-acre property owned by Bernard and Donna Faircloth when Animal Services intervened. It looks like the woman was a one-time breeder," said Scott Ortner, director of Animal Services for the Sarasota County Sheriff's Office. "The Faircloths did not want any of the dogs to be euthanized, so they eventually fell into a hoarding situation," the couple said last week. There's an ongoing investigation and charges are pending. Speaking of Animal Services, Hillsborough County Animal Services has hired a new director of Animal Services. That's Ian Hallett. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. He's a Florida native from Riverview and most recently, in fact, still at the moment, I believe, serving as the deputy chief for Austin Animal Services. So he's expected to assume his duties June 18th, 2012. And all kinds of controversy has erupted even before he was named. Just the whole issue of animal services and trying to move towards a no-kill function. And anyway, so I hope to do something more with that on the show in a forthcoming edition of Talking Animals and see if we can delve into this a little bit better and more expertly. It seems very, very tricky and complicated and a little opaque to me at the moment, but that's probably because there's secret meetings. Of course it's opaque. Anyway, let's see. What else is coming on May 18th, Friday, May 18th? There's the vegan bake sale and thrift store shopping to raise money to benefit these sick kittens that were rescued by Cat Crusaders when they were just a couple weeks old. And they already had upper respiratory infections and now have pneumonia. They spend their days in an incubator on oxygen fighting for survival. And so anyway, proceeds from the vegan bake sale and thrift store shopping will help these keep these guys going and getting better and better. And so that's going to be Friday, May 18th from 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at Animal-Based Charities Thrift Store at 4340 South Manhattan Avenue, Tampa, Florida. And other local news, at the 10th Annual Tuxes and Tails Gala on Saturday, the Humane Society of Tampa Bay celebrated their centennial and received a pretty whopping birthday present from a local business owner and entrepreneur, Bob Reyna, who gave a $100,000 gift. So, congratulations to all the way around, I guess, on that. And I think we'll see if we have time. We're going to come back to some of the other news items and announcements we have. But I think right now it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is a comic I was unfamiliar with till I saw her at the Moon Tower Comedy Festival a few weeks ago in Austin, where I was really knocked out by her. And she's got a highly relevant bit for chatting with Bruce Cameron in a moment or two. So this is Erin Foley with a piece called Dogs on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
We're thinking about getting a dog. Dog people, clap. Yeah? People love the dogs. I love the dog. I've never had a dog. It would be super exciting to get a dog. Not, and funny. Hilarious. I don't know what kind of dog I want to get. It just seems like when I look around, there's a lot of aggressive crossbreeding going on with dogs these days. It's weird. I don't even know what I'm looking at anymore. Like, you used to be able to look at a dog and be like, that's a lab. That's a golden retriever. Now you look at a dog and you're like, what the hell is that? It was like a face of like a Doberman, like a shepherd body, but it's so tiny. It's such a tiny dog. And I'm always like, excuse me, what kind of dog do you have? And they're like, it's a German Doberoodle. Yes, yes, yes. I don't know why I didn't go with German Doberoodle. Yes. I was going to go with creepy, because it's a creepy dog. You're creepy, and the whole situation's creepy. I kind of want to, like, push the envelope with the dog owners. You know what I mean? What I want to do is I want to rent a Shetland pony and take it into the dog park. Just to see the look of the dog owners' faces and be like, excuse me, what kind of dog is that? It's like a mutt. I don't know. It's like part mastiff, Great Dane, hyena, collie mix. Something like that. Wow, it just really looks like a Shetland pony. I know! We get that all the time! It's uncanny! Absolutely uncanny, but it's such a great dog. I mean, I haven't even heard it bark. It's just quiet, quiet dog. And then I'm gonna jump on top of it and ride it out of the park.
All right, that was Erin Foley with a piece called Dogs, taken from her album Lower the Bar. In the background, we're doing all Beastie Boys instrumentals today by way of paying tribute to Adam Yauch. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, W. Bruce Cameron. As I noted earlier in the show, Bruce is an award-winning columnist and the author of several books, including A Dog's Purpose, which won a raft of glowing reviews, spent 10 months on the New York Times bestseller list, and is on the path to becoming a feature film. The sequel, A Dog's Journey, came out yesterday. So, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Bruce Cameron back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning. It's great to be back.
Great. Well, thanks for making the time to join us on Talking Animals, and congrats on the new book, A Dog's Journey, which, of course, I want to discuss with you in a moment or two. But given that it's you know, a sequel to A Dog's Purpose, I'd like to talk about that just for a moment or two.
Okay.
First, just to provide some context for those listening who haven't yet had an opportunity to read the book, maybe you could just give like a, you know, a real brief sort of description of what A Dog's Purpose is.
Sure, A Dog's Purpose, it answers the questions, well, what would happen if your dog never really died? What would it be like for the dog to be reborn, to be reincarnated, and to remember previous lives? So in A Dog's Purpose, we track the story of a dog who comes to the world and gradually comes to believe that the reason why he keeps being reborn, and I say he, but he's actually sometimes he's a girl dog, the reason why he keeps being reborn is that he must have a purpose. There must be some reason why he is being reborn. And until he fulfills that purpose, it'll just keep happening over and over again. And so his journey, if you will, becomes a search for his purpose. Why is he here?
And the among the many things that sort of go beyond that description is that although I guess there's really no other way to tell the story, but the way that you tell that story is by the dog, going through all these rebirths is indeed the narrator is telling the story of the book. And,
yeah, and it was important to me, Duncan. There are plenty of books out there that are narrated by dogs.
Yeah.
It was important for me to have this be a real dog.
Sure.
And, he, for example, this dog can sit at your feet and listen to a conversation, but not understand it. I mean, the dog has a very limited vocabulary. So we know as human readers, we know what's going on in his world because we can hear the conversation, but the dog doesn't know. And the dog is motivated by the same things that all dogs are motivated by, which is, you know, joy and food and
Good smells. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
well,
that's the way Dog's Purpose came together, and I think that's why it did so well, why people are so happy with it, is that it's a real dog and not just somebody talking like a, you know, talking from the viewpoint of a dog, but yet being sophisticated like a person.
Well, yeah, I think you're right, and I want to maybe in a moment to get into more about just sort of the you know, the approach to writing it and how, you know, where the sort of rules, if that's the right word, for you know, what the dog would know and understand and what the dog would be able to report. But what you're just saying now, I think, is really crucial, is that it really, I mean, you were on the show in July 2010, like today, I think it was within a day or two of when that book came out. And I think, and thinking back on the conversation, I mean, it was pretty upbeat and favorable and, you know, it was obviously a good book. But I don't think either of us suspected, then at least, the degree to which it would click with the book-buying public. I mean, 10 months on the New York Times bestseller list? Yikes, that's great. But, but why, I mean, looking back, and obviously now you've written, you know, the next part of that, which we'll get into in a sec. But I mean, you know, what aspects of the book really struck that kind of chord? Because, I mean, you don't get that response and you don't sell those, that number of books without, like, a lot of people, even if they're not all, you know, not all dog nuts necessarily. So you really spoke to people.
Yeah, I think what surprised me, I didn't expect this, Duncan. I didn't expect that people would wind up buying this book for friends of theirs who had lost a pet, lost a dog. That it turns out that the connection here is it's so about the bond, and it's so about the lesson of the dog. And the lesson of the dog is pretty much, for me, that they're here for a very short period of time. You know, the day you bring home a puppy, that there will be a day of heartbreak ahead. That's just what happens.
Yeah.
And that's not an expectation we take into any other relationship. Now, we pretty much always go into denial about it. But I think in the end, when we lose our dogs, what we have learned from them is that life is short and precious, and you should enjoy it the way dogs do, which is, you know, you can pretty much get a dog excited about anything. You can say, hey, you want to go lock yourself in the closet, and the dog is ready to go. You know?
That sounds great. Yeah. When do we go? Yeah.
And I think that's the element that rises to the top in a dog's purpose, really comes to this place of teaching us that, yeah, this is going to be hard to say goodbye to our friends, but if there's a way in which our true love never dies, and our real friends are always there for us if we know where to look, and that's a dog's purpose.
Absolutely. This is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with author Bruce Cameron, whose new book is A Dog's Journey, sequel to A Dog's Purpose. If you'd like to ask Bruce a question, offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, or email us at dj@wmnf.org. So Bruce, I guess, in the wake of the sort of remarkable acclaim and success that A Dog's Purpose generated, what sort of consideration did you give to the sort of pros and cons of writing a sequel? I mean, that seemed like kind of one of those lightning in a bottle moments. And I know you've, you know, had more, at least one foot now and again in show biz and the movie biz. You know, anything successful, they immediately say, okay, let's get a sequel started tomorrow. But, you know, as we know also, that's not always something that works out so well.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't put the final period in A Dog's Purpose and feel that I had written the first in a series of books. Mm-hmm. I thought that I had written the standalone book, but I, you know, you remember the premise. This is a dog that doesn't die.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like the kind of dog books you read where at the end of you love the dog the whole book, and at the end you dig a hole and throw the dog in it because it's, you know, it's about a dead dog. I hate books like that. And so that's not what happens in A Dog's Purpose. That means we've still got this wonderful dog. This dog that has narrated us through his life is still alive. And I started pondering what might be this wonderful dog's purpose now. What kind of journey would he go on next? And so A Dog's Journey picks up right where we left off with the dog now named Buddy, you know, just so soon after the end of the book, and the dog starting to find his purpose again, because there's this little child who is always getting in trouble. And if it's not, if it weren't for Buddy, this baby would be in real trouble. The baby falls off the dock practically in the first couple of pages into a pond.
Yeah.
And Buddy's got to save the child from drowning, and it goes on from there. And so this dog, the new journey is, helping this girl find her way into adulthood, even though she makes a lot of bad choices.
Well, yeah. So again, Buddy, as he is at the beginning of the book, and then again becomes other things and under other genders as the new book unfolds. But I mean, so it really is again about a new purpose or sort of renewed purpose, I guess. But I also felt almost immediately that, as you kind of touched on before, in terms of why it became the phenomenon it did and why people maybe gave the book to other friends, is that I also felt the new book, almost in the opening page or so, is really about, among other things, loss. I mean, within, I think it was the third paragraph, that the dog Buddy is noting the pain of Ethan's loss, and that's his, you know, that was his master. And it says something like, only sleep soothed it away. And, you know, to me, that felt like kind of almost, you know, sort of a mission statement of its own, that, you know, that the book is about loss of important figures in our lives, and whether those figures are humans or animals, or whether those experiencing that loss is a human or an animal.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say that the book is about loss so much as it is, celebrating the ups and downs of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once again, it's just it's the viewpoint of our dog.
Yeah.
Where they just think everything is great. And I know dogs mourn, and I know dogs pick up on our mourning and our feelings.
Sure.
And they can help us through that. I know that. I know that they can feel that pain, but they also are these magnificent creatures that are here to teach us that there's always something good about everything that's happening if you just look for it.
Right,
and
right.
Dogs are really good at sniffing that out.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Hey, there's a tennis ball under the couch. You know, it's like it really can change your perspective if you just spend time really just trying to think like your dog, just trying to think what is there to be happy about right now.
Sure. This tennis ball has helped me forget all my troubles that I was fretting over a moment. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So at the same time, Bruce, I mean, to what extent do you feel a certain amount of, I don't know, for lack of a better phrase, magical thinking is required for reading this book and maybe even writing it? But I mean, there's obviously, you know, what we're talking about and sort of, you know, that this dog is sort of recounting his various rebirths or her rebirth. And again, the way he and or she, you know, meet up with kind of crucial people over all these lives. I mean, it's, you know, it's there is some magical kind of element to them.
Yeah, I think so. A dog's journey is a very unique journey in that, as I've been told many times by people who have come up to me and talked to me about reading a dog's purpose and have said to me, you know, I swear, my dog Bella is really my dog Molly. I can't explain why, but it's just like, you know, they'll have pretty passionate and pretty convincing arguments that it is the same dog.
Yeah.
So in a dog's journey, this one woman has such a perilous life that she really needs her dog with her all the time. The dog. Let's call the dog Buddy. Buddy finds his way back to this woman again and again.
Yeah.
And I really think that what that did, I think a dog's journey with the way that developed, it sort of showed the dog maturing into this really wise creature.
Mm-hmm.
But then, all of what the dog learned is necessary to help in a dog's journey, to help the dog helped this girl, CJ, with her perilous life.
And yeah.
I think the lessons learned before, that's what helps now.
Right. Well, and again, I think that's part of what we were touching on a moment or two ago is that, again, presenting a dog as the storyteller does seem to, you know, pose some kind of, you know, unique challenges. And, and so, you know, when you were starting out, or maybe, you know, obviously probably just continued what you had established for yourself with the dog's purpose. But I mean, how did you decide, like, the dog's voice and level of understanding? I mean, you said a few minutes ago that there's certain things that the dog just wouldn't understand, and yet, you know, the dog uses the word like disquieting at one point, but doesn't understand certain things, but while reporting on pretty much everything. So how did you kind of frame for yourself the storytelling logic, especially as this dog then not only goes through these lives, but carries through at least key lessons, from the previous one?
Yeah, that was actually the challenge, Duncan. When I wrote A Dog's Purpose, I sat down and thought, if I write a book with a 200-word vocabulary, we've all read that book in kindergarten. You know, it's really, there's no way that's going to sustain a story. So I had to develop a rule, and it went sort of like this, that there are, I'm a storyteller, this is a story. I have to use all the tools at my disposal, the words necessary to tell the story have to be used. When it comes to the dog's vocabulary, that, you know, dogs are probably much more about nouns than they are verbs, and certainly they're not about adverbs or adjectives.
Yeah.
So there were times when I allowed the dog's expression to use a metaphor or to you know, like to think of all buses as being school bus, because he hears the word school bus and he knows what a school bus is.
Mm-hmm.
He's a different one. It's a different colored school bus, but to him it's a school bus. Just to remind the reader that the dog is experiencing the world without the benefit of the vocabulary, even though, you know, I encountered this, it's pretty technical, but I encountered this problem when in the very first part of a dog's purpose, when the dog gets to a road, and I thought, well, maybe the dog would think that the road was actually like a rock river. And then I thought, well, no, how would the dog know what a river was? And I stopped and thought, yeah, I'm going to have to give myself a break here. I have to tell a really entertaining story. I have to use words like disquieting.
Sure.
And I have to make it so that it'll be enjoyable for the reader. So, but when it comes to what the dog understands, if someone's speaking directly to the dog, we hear what that person says, and then the dog will say, well, I don't know what he was doing. Obviously, he was mad about something, but I don't know what it was.
Yeah. You
know, it's like that. So, and it's obvious in a dog's journey that the dog, Buddy, is a little more sophisticated than he was in his early lives in the dog's purpose. But in the dog's journey, he still is the same dog, and he still can be spoken to and not understand a word of what's being said.
Right. And then plus sometimes with that sort of simplicity, you know, there's great humor, like somewhere along the line, he's recounting something and meeting a small black dog named Get Back Here Milo. So, you know, just the little nice things like that. So let me let folks know again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is author Bruce Cameron, whose new book is A Dog's Journey, the sequel to A Dog's Purpose. It just came out yesterday. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org, and let's get one of the callers on, because hi, you're on Talking Animals with Bruce Cameron. Hello, it's you. Oh, all right. Well, maybe they'll call back. They didn't seem to be there at the moment. But so Bruce, I mean, what you know, there's also beyond just sort of the storytelling stuff we talked about. There's you know, even from the sort of, you know, opening page or the dedication, I mean, there's really a lot of elements of service dogs, of fostering, adoption, really important things. And without giving too much away, I mean, cancer-detecting dogs play an important role in this book. I mean, how did you decide to include that or make it, you know, at least a sort of a fairly prominent part of the book? Did you have personal involvement with that, or did...
It was really fun for me. And you're right. There is, you know, this dog and a dog's journey has many different varied roles. And one of them is being involved with training to detect cancer. And it just so happens, a good friend of mine is doing this. She's a dog trainer, professional dog trainer named Dina Zafiris. And her mission is to, training dogs to detect cancer on people's breath, to detect their odor. And the thinking here is that because dogs' noses are so amazing, astoundingly sensitive, and that they can pretty easily be trained to detect a cancerous tissue sample with a remarkable degree of accuracy. And ultimately, the goal would be of the research is to develop a machine to try to figure out what it is the dog is smelling and then put it in your doctor's office. And when you go in for your annual physical, you blow into a tube and the thing tells you whether or not you've got any signs of malignancy. But I wanted to come at it from a different standpoint, which was to ask what would happen if we had these dogs and just took them to a health fair and marched them past a row of people and let them signal when they walk by somebody who has cancer on his breath. And that's sort of one of the twists that in the story of a dog's journey is how the dog, who's named Molly at that point and is a female, how she comes to become involved in this cancer detection.
And then one of the things that, that goes back to sort of our discussion of sort of the rules and the logic and the dog, what the dogs are taking with them into their next life is that, then it really does, when the dog has moved on from being a Molly, plays a significant, plot point, I guess, in the book from there. So,
yeah.
It's really interesting and notable. And again, that it's such a, again, as you're suggesting, such an important, yet another amazing thing that the dogs can do and do to help us.
And it's worth noting that in a dog's journey, the dog doesn't know. The dog never knows that it's cancer that he's detecting. He never thinks, got cancer. That's not what happens for a dog. A dog is just, I've been trained when I smell this to react in this way, and I smell that, I'm reacting. That's it.
Right. I think you just said it's kind of that weird metallic smell or something to that extent and some weird, unmistakable odor. But does not know what the odor means or what it translates to. Or, again, this dog would be, at least at one point, fairly upset if it understood what it was smelling. So,
yeah.
So Bruce, we're just sort of in the last few moments of our time, but one of the things too, before I forget, going back a little bit to a dog's purpose is, what is the status? I know there's been discussion and I think more than discussion on a dog's purpose being made into a feature film. Where does that stand?
Well, we wrote the screenplay and, DreamWorks bought it and we're just in that weird sausage making process where, everybody was in a hurry to get the screenplay, and then it just vanished into the giant maw of DreamWorks. I think we'll start production soon, but it's out of my hands.
Sure,
but
sure.
This is it's such a mystery. I don't know how movies get made because it just seems like it's as bureaucratic and corporate as anything else that I've ever come across, but. These are all really good people, and they really got the book. They were so enthusiastic about it, and they really wanted to stay true to the book so that all the people who have been so supportive of A Dog's Purpose would be happy with what they saw on the screen.
Cool. And the fact that you wrote the screenplay, I guess, really further ensures that the really true spirit and soul of that book does hopefully make it onto the screen.
That was certainly the goal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's just take at least one of our email questions here. This says, a buddy has stayed with me since I first read A Dog's Purpose. I look forward to the new one. Do dogs continue to inspire you? How do you feel about cats?
Well, there are some cats in A Dog's Journey. And some people took me to task accusing me of not liking cats because of what happens in A Dog's Purpose. And I said, well, the dog has an uneasy relationship with a few cats, but there is one in A Dog's Purpose that he comes to be quite fond of, sort of sheepishly fond of. And that continues with A Dog's Journey. There's some very important cats in that book. I think cats are great. They're totally different than dogs. I'm a dog person because I don't really understand cats that much. But I've had cats, and so I don't have a problem with them. I am inspired by dogs. My dog Tucker is a rescue, and I'm really focused on rescue as an important part of our stewardship of the species that we bred to be with us.
Sure.
And so I'm really happy in a dog's journey. I think all the dogs are rescues, and that's really important to me.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, and I'm inspired to the point where I've got a book coming out in Christmas at 2013, as yet untitled. That'll have it'll be all be about dogs. So I continue to, I'm the dog book guy now.
Wow. Yeah. And not to mention incredibly prolific. I was going to ask you if there was another book or another dog book in the offing, and of course it's already done. Yeah. Practically. But so Bruce, did Tucker, if I'm not mistaken, did he sort of join your family after you wrote A Dog's Purpose? And
And this is I would love to tell your listeners this. You know, I lost a dog. I lost a Labrador, and I thought I just wasn't ready for another dog. And I hear people saying that all the time. Oh, it was so hard. I'm just not, I don't know that I'll ever adopt another dog. That was so painful to go through. And I said that for 4 years. I said, I'm just not ready for a dog. And I finally got a dog, and I thought, what was I thinking? How could I have deprived myself of this amount of joy for even a moment? And that's when I began pondering the fact that we do lose them, but that doesn't mean that. But that doesn't mean that it's foolish to adopt them. It simply means that we have to mature and grow as humans and come to embrace the fact that everything is temporary. So get on your hands and knees and get that tennis ball out from underneath the couch, because that's where the fun is, and look for that everywhere in your life.
Not to mention that new dog needs probably more fodder for the new book it's writing. So you gotta keep that going too. All right. Well, Bruce, thanks so much. This has been, Bruce Cameron. Brand new, book is, Dog's Journey, just out yesterday, but anywhere you get books, that's where you can get A Dog's Journey. And, there's a great, pretty monstrously supported Facebook page for A Dog's Journey. And he's got a website, Bruce Cameron, CAMERON.com. And, Bruce, thanks again for joining us on Talking Animals. Good luck with the book. Needless to say, perhaps I love this one just like, I loved A Dog's Purpose. So good luck.
Oh, thank you, Duncan, very much. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks so much. Take care.
Bye.
All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals with the, show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WMNF member to win. And there'll be a prize, a copy of Bruce Cameron's new book, A Dog's Journey, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. And again, sometimes our animal tunes are only that in title, right? We have a pretty elastic definition of what constitutes an animal tune. But anyway, it is Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
Hey, mama said the way you move gonna make you sweat, gonna make you groove.
All right, and a not-too-shocking development. All the phone lines are lit. Let's take them in the order they came. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune?
Black dog.
That's right.
All right.
Okay, what is your first name, sir?
Danny.
Danny?
Yeah.
All right, and we will put you on hold and come back and get your information and send you off a copy of Bruce Cameron's fabulous new book, A Dog's Journey. So thanks for listening. Congratulations.
Another great show.
Okay, thanks. I'll put you back on hold, and I'll come get you in a few minutes. Okay, folks, we do have a winner. Danny was the first to identify that, of course, it was Black Dog, right? Keeping our dog theme going, at least partially. So, anyway, you know, we have been doing, as we're doing still now, all Beastie Boys instrumentals today by way of paying tribute to Adam Yauch, MCA. And I'd like to go a step further by playing a Beastie Boys animal tune. So this is Funky Donkey by the Beastie Boys, featuring the late Adam Yauch.
Put this on a zip disk, send it to your lawyer. File me on the funky. Like sipping lemonade, and on the palm of big holiday party, like Dolly Parton.
I'm gonna get pad thai, as a starter, I'm gonna order Pepsi, you is no stalker.
I'm part of it, I take a shit, I'm over my dome, and my glitz, chicken.
I really must sting just a sucker for the rest of them in fairy dust.
I don't wear Crocs, and I don't wear sandals, the world don't wear it, cause the vandals put the handles.
Stop singing that song, it's the wrong thing, what you like it,
it's funky donkey.
The Beastie Boys, featuring the late great Adam Yauch, MCA, with Funky Donkey from their last album. And still more Beastie Boys in the background. So I want to get back to a little more animal news here. I don't know what's going on legislatively. Votes that were, you know, taken yesterday, or people that were voting on things. And along those lines, read this to you. Things just got tougher for pit bulls in need of a home in Maryland now that the Maryland Court of Appeals has deemed the breed to be, quote, inherently dangerous, end quote. The new ruling paves the way for legal action for anyone attacked by a pit bull or pit bull mix in the state. Not only will the owner of an attacking pit bull be strictly liable for damages, but even a landlord who rents to a pit bull owner, will be culpable. Quote, when an attack involves pit bulls, it is no longer necessary to prove that the particular pit bull or pit bulls are dangerous, the court ruled in a case stemming from a young boy who suffered life-threatening injuries when he was attacked by a pit bull in 2007. Previously, a plaintiff in a negligence lawsuit had to prove that the specific pit bull was aggressive. Now, the breed alone is enough to establish a case for damages. The Maryland SPCA, which facilitates adoptions for dogs who are currently without homes, is concerned that it will be more difficult to find families to adopt the breed. Compounding the problem is the possibility that owners may now abandon pit bulls in their care because of the new ruling. We believe that an animal's behavior should be the determining factor in whether or not the animal is considered dangerous, said Cheryl Bernard Smith of SPCA. We don't believe that a particular breed should be pinpointed for that. And from the LA Times, we've got Meow the Fat Cat, whose 39-pound girth helped raise awareness about obesity in pets, has died of lung failure. The orange and white tabby was turned into a Santa Fe, New Mexico animal shelter last month and quickly made international headlines. At first, the story was played for laughs. The two-year-old cat apparently favored hot dogs and was so fat he got stuck inside things. He barely fit into his animal carrier and was likened to Puss and Puss in Boots from the Shrek movies. But Meow's weight underscored a growing problem. Pets in America are getting fatter, just like their owners, and all that extra weight can hasten death. That's what happened in Meow's case, said Mary Martin, executive director of the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. The shelter assumed care of Meow when his 87-year-old owner could no longer care for the mammoth feline. "We are so heartbroken," Martin told the Los Angeles Times. "He had such a big personality, we all fell in love with him. Ideally, Meow would have weighed 7 to 10 pounds. Carrying 39 pounds of weight on his feline frame was the equivalent of a man weighing more than 600 pounds, experts said. And probably lastly for today, on the Associated Press, 3 years ago, Bear was a 100-pound child of German Shepherd nobody wanted at a Texas shelter. Debbie Zeisler came to his rescue. She has lost count of the times since that he has come to hers. On Monday, Bear was honored with the 30th National Dog Hero Award by the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, Los Angeles. Last May, Zeisler had a seizure, fell down some steps, hit her head, and lost consciousness in her front yard. Bear scratched on every front door in their Millsap neighborhood, but nobody answered. A Parker County animal control officer saw the frantic dog and went to help. Bear led the officer to Zeisler. As a by then conscious Zeisler was being loaded into an ambulance, Bear did not hesitate to jump in with her and accompany her to the hospital. The dog recognizes the signs of imminent seizures and will lean on Zeisler's legs so she can sit down before they happen, explained the Society's Anna Bustelos. Bear never had any training, but 3 days after Zeisler took him home, he started alerting her to possible problems. He figured it out on his own. This all ties in to our show today in one way or another, does it not? All right. So, I think we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. And we'll be back next Wednesday, May 16th, when our guest will be Ruby Roth, the author and illustrator of children's books, most recently Vegan is Love, which has kicked up more than a little controversy. We'll discuss the book, the controversy, and more with Ruby Roth next week on Talking Animals. I hope you'll join me then. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We'll also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast, outreach consultant, and more now is Libby Busalis. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the fabulous Scott Elliott on the All Souls edition of It's the Music. Coming up momentarily, airing from noon to three right here on WMNF. And we're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This one by yet another act playing Tropical Heat Wave on Saturday at Fave Bars. Get your tickets now. I'll see you there. This is Chuck Prophet with What Makes the Monkey Dance, taking us up to the NPR News on WMNF Tampa. Speak again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. on Talking Animals, and hope to see you Saturday at Tropical Heat Wave. Thanks for listening. Take care. It's WMNF Tampa.
Like candy, printing powder while the quills creep and the wolves weep. In the dead of the night, I'm a counting sheep. All night long, I'm toss and turn. I wonder what it's gonna take to learn what makes the monkey dance. What makes the monkey dance? What makes the monkey dance? Same old
makes the monkey dance?
What makes the monkey dance? What makes the monkey dance? What makes the monkey dance?
What makes the monkey dance?
What makes the monkey dance?
What makes the monkey dance?
What makes the monkey dance? Cable round the corner under the table. I'm a little